A big thanks again to Paddy Rooney, Chair of Friends of Letterkenny University Hospital, Ben Harkin, Chair of Ogra Fianna Fáil in Donegal, and of course, Councillor Declan Meehan, an independent in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District, for their contributions over the course of the previous hour. And thanks so much to all of you for texting in. Some of your comments: 70 TDs in the Dáil are more interested in saving foxes than they are at saving their unborn child. What is Ireland coming to? And this is in relation to a motion that was put before the Dáil during the week, and it was narrowly defeated. It was a motion looking to restore the health regulation of termination of pregnancy, Amendment Bill 2023, and it was defeated by a final margin of 73 votes to 71, marking the closest vote on the current Dáil session. It means that this is not restored, okay? So what the bill would have done, just to be clear, it would have got rid of the three-day waiting, the three-day wait. So at the moment, there's a 72-hour waiting period currently required for an abortion on request. The argument being made was that this three-day wait means there are still women who are travelling abroad for an abortion because they know what they want to do and they're not prepared to wait those 72 hours, which I presume is a cooling-off period, is a very crude way of putting it, but I presume that's what it's there for. Expanding access. So this is what was almost put on, was almost restored. And this is the one that's caused quite a bit of controversy. And some are framing this as abortion up until birth, right? Which it's, you can make that argument, but you can also make a counter-argument in relation to that. So expanding access, what would that have meant? That meant, or would have meant, that allowing for abortion on request before fetal viability. And that is, I think, generally accepted to be about 22 weeks. So 4 into 22 is 5.5 months, and the argument being that that's just on the brink of viability. So in other words, that's abortion up until birth, I think really is why it's being phrased as such. Now, that access, that early access, or sorry, that abortion on request up until 22 weeks circa would be in cases of fatal fetal abnormality likely to lead to death within 1 year of birth. So that's what TDs were voting on. I can get you a breakdown of how TDs in this county voted if you would like. Government TDs had a free vote on the issue. Health Minister Jennifer Carr-McNeill, Helen McEntee, Jack Chambers, I believe they voted for this to be placed back on. And others in this county did as well. I believe both Piers Doherty and Padraig McLaughlin voted in a way that would have, if it had passed, got rid of the waiting period and allowed abortion up until birth. That in a lot of people's heads is 9 months, right? We know it's not always the case, but in reality, the wording of the bill is up to 22 weeks, which is like 5.5 months, and only in cases of fatal fetal abnormality likely to lead to death within 1 year of birth. A caller says, Ireland will be a dumping ground for data centres, which will use our natural resources, and we pay for it. The centres should have their own power supplies, absolutely not connected into the country supply line. 20% of our power they use. As to who should pay for the upgrading of the electricity grid comes down to one thing: who actually owns the grid. On the issue of fox hunting, I'm disappointed that the fox hunting bill wasn't passed. What they're trying to ban is absolutely cruel and barbaric. I'm a farmer and I'm disgusted. Farmers should have been consulted on this. Fox hunters wanted to come onto my land and I said absolutely not. The general public is against fox hunting. Putting an animal apart, or pulling an animal apart, is absolutely savage. More on that. Greg, I'd like you to ask the panel about the contradiction of saving the foxes and on the other hand, abortion. I think the issue of abortion is, and whatever your views on it are, is so significant. Conflating that to foxes, I think, would be very crude of me to do so. They're two separate votes. They're completely unconnected. I fully understand where you're coming from. And if that text had come in or I'd seen it, I'm not saying I wouldn't have put it to the panel. But one's an issue of women's health, fetal health, baby's health, termination, whether we should or we shouldn't. The public had a say in that in relation to a referendum. The other is foxes. And as important as foxes are, you know, they're not babies, or they're not women, or they're not fetuses, or they're not that conversation. And I think conflating them, I really find, especially those who aren't in favour of abortion, I think conflating those two issues is, considering they are two completely different votes, is really quite... I think it actually diminishes the argument, to be completely honest with you. I think you can make a very strong argument without comparing fetuses or babies or what a woman might be going through or their life or their death with a fox. Greg, in relation to fox hunting, I'm a horse rider. We love animals, including foxes. Fox hunting is wrongly demonized by the left society. It's not fox hunting, it is trail hunting. A man-made scent is laid out before the hunt for hounds to follow as they're trained to follow the horses. I've been on a good few hunts this 20 years. I've never known a fox to be caught or killed. Trail hunting is pre-planned. It's a pre-planned route with permission granted. Very few foxes be out in daylight as they are nocturnal. What about the cruel brutes who go out with terriers and guns who go onto land without permission to pull and tear foxes out of their dens and shoot them? Us horse riders are not out to kill foxes. It's only and all about the planned day's jumping over natural obstacles in the countryside. The public need educated on this. Stop demonising horse riders. Go after the real cruel hunters, farmers. Right, okay. Now, I don't associate someone riding a horse with being a fox hunter or taking part in trail hunting, to be honest with you. Maybe that's just my way of thinking, but I wouldn't have thought the two were the same. I understand you have to be on the back of a horse to do it, but... right, leadership. Greg, surely a political party should run a mile from a potential candidate if there's any hint of controversy at all. If there are rumours flying about, there's usually some kind of truth behind them. In this day and age, with so much scrutiny on everything, it was actually stupid and irresponsible to go with a candidate with a question mark hanging over their head. I wonder will the fact that Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are now best buddies have any bearing on any potential leadership contest. I can't imagine people like Pat the Cope being overly happy about the new cosy arrangement with the old enemy. It would never have happened in the 1960s, 70s or 80s. On staying with politics, actually, the panel are on talking about predictions for our population doubling in the years to come from people coming from Eastern Europe, the Middle East, Africa, India, etc., as if it's just a normal thing. We'll become a minority in our own country. How can they think that our country being invaded, these people coming in on work visas, but the people you're talking about, if you want to call it an invasion, that's fine. How do we... Okay, but just explain to me, right? And I'm not pro anything or anti anything, but I'm... pro facts. How are we going to... We're not having children anymore at the numbers we used to. How are we going to sustain ourselves without immigration? It's a genuine question to that listener. I want to be convinced one way or other. And please don't say, bring back people that are in Australia. The numbers aren't there, right? We're talking the need for millions of people, right? Not the 40 or 50,000 that head away each year and come back each year. In terms of people emigrating and coming home, the figure's pretty much equal every year. It's not the same people, it's different people, right? So those people choose to live on the shores of the United States or Australia. So we can't make them come back. How do we run our health service? How do we run our care sector? How do we care for the older population? How do we pay for that? Who does the caring? We're not creating the people here. You talk about Ireland being a minority in our own country. We're not making children the way we used to in the past, right? So we're going to have an awful lot of people over the age of 70. They're going to need care in their home. They're going to need people working to pay for pensions. They're going to need people working in hospitals. And it's not just the elderly either. It's other people that need care in our community. The population simply is not going to be there to... keep the country running. That's a fact. It can't be disputed because you just look at the population trends and the age trends. So please, to people who say, don't bring in people into the country, we'll be a minority in our own country. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm asking you to explain how we run this country in 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years' time. I wonder how many children my children are going to have. You know, I don't know. And I'm not saying... and trying to shame people into having kids. I'm just pointing out the birth rate, the aging population, the amount of people that's required to pay for a country, to keep that country running, the workforce. You know, the people simply aren't there. So where do we get the people or the money to do that? And don't worry about it. That corporation tax will be long gone by then. So what do we do in that situation? As I say, people who leave this country are entitled to leave it. We can't make them stay here. You know, we can't do sort of like a compulsory retention order. People will always travel. People leave and an equal number, they come back every single year. That's a fact. It's been like that for generations. There is always obviously a bit of a depopulation or a significant depopulation because of housing and jobs and what have you. But people come back every year in the same numbers that they leave, albeit being different people. So how do we run Ireland Inc. as a company with no staff? Let me just put it like that, and the population being the staff. Give me, because I genuinely don't know, and it's not that I'm pro this and anti that or pro the other. It's just the pure basics of running Ireland Inc. Let me know how we do that, because I don't see how we can. Right, so traditionally the festive season is a busy one for our butcher shops across the country. However, the industry's representative body has said that many shops have been forced to close in recent years, citing the impact of convenience stores, supermarkets, and changes in the nation's diet means they are in decline and fewer young people are joining the industry. Jack Malloy is president of the Association of Craft Butchers of Ireland, and he joins me now. Thank you very much for your time. It is appreciated, Jack.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, so how significant is this decline then?
Well, there's a number of reasons, Greg, really. I mean, it will have, you know, natural kind of retirement and things like that would probably be one reason. But the biggest reason, I suppose, at the moment is the change in people shop, convenience being one, you know, people going to supermarkets. And, you know, people just probably change the way in which they cook dinner and things like that. Just eat those kind of methods of getting food. And the unfortunate thing as well with a lot of butchers is that you don't have a lot of guys coming back into the trade, even though we have introduced an apprenticeship scheme for young butchers, and that has been reasonably successful. You still don't have a lot of having some.
Yeah, could you lift your phone? I think the phone might be sitting on the microphone, if that's okay. Sorry about that, Jack. Yep. It's interfering. No, it's fine. Just hold it in front of you. It's just it was sitting on the mic. From the butcher's eyes, no, it's okay. Jack, from the butchers I speak to too, though, it's a tough life. You know, early starts, late finishes, weekends. You know, if you are a traditional Irish butcher, your butcher shop on the main street of towns and villages up and down this country, it's a tough old job, isn't it? Do you think that needs to be looked at to encourage more into it?
The very nature of the type of work is it's a business. Very tough. It doesn't make... Can you hear me okay?
I'll tell you, it's coming in and out there. So what we might do is I'll come back to you in a moment. Stay where you are, because it is an issue that I wish to tease out with you a little bit further. So we might put Jack through on line one, if that's okay, Caroline. Just as we do that, give over, let the population fall, we'll be better off, says a listener who perhaps is not concerned as to who's going to look after them when they need that support, but that's okay. On the having children issue, most Irish people can't afford to have more children because of the crazy cost of living, because we don't get social welfare, housing, etc., like most of the immigrants get. And on the issue of foreign carers, why can't we pay our own nurses and doctors to stay in Ireland? Another, I was surprised and concerned to hear an Ain't Too meeting being linked with a Catholic novena in Cock Hill. The church is clear it must remain independent from political party politics. Novenas are for prayer, not political messaging or implied endorsement. Right, back to Jack Malloy. Jack, sorry, you were. I was sort of outlining the butchers I've spoken to. It's a tough old way to make a living. And how much of that do you think is contributing to people maybe perhaps not as resilient as ones were in the past saying, no, butchering's not for me?
Yeah, we do see a certain amount of that. But, I mean, like I said, in the apprenticeship scheme that we have about 60 people in apprenticeship at the moment. And, like, they really enjoy it. It is a very rewarding business. It's a good business to be in. It's a great trade to have. You can travel all over the world. People find it very rewarding because you can be very creative. It's a trade that you can you know, use your skills and your imagination to be able to develop new products. And it's something that they seem to like, Craig, you know. So, yeah, it is. I won't deny it's a very tough business. You can be in early in the morning. You might finish late in the evening sometime. But, you know, in a good system, in a good shop, you know, it can be very, very rewarding.
We have seen a halving in the number of butcher shops in Ireland over the last 20 years. Can that retraction be stemmed, or the social sort of changes that you referenced a little earlier on, plus competition from supermarkets, etc., that this is just all going in one way, that maybe there isn't a future for the traditional butcher shop?
I wouldn't go that far to say that there isn't a future. There certainly is a future for the butcher. I think that there are many aspects to this question, though, Greg. I mean, you know, like, the first one is that we certainly do. I mean, the story of the Irish butcher shop, the heritage behind it and the tradition behind it is something that butchers are very proud of. And I think that, you know, over the last 20 years, certainly the business has changed enormously. And the type of products that you now need to be able to produce to be able to attract business into your butcher shop is something that would have been very different to what it was like 20 years ago. And a lot of those butchers might not have been able to keep up with the pace of change. And so a lot of them would probably naturally have gotten out of the business. So you certainly have seen that. Mm. I think you see a lot of the butchers that are there at the moment that will have adapted, especially kind of around COVID was a time when the butcher shop was quite busy because it was an essential service at the time. And you will see a lot of young butchers, young people coming in, young customers coming in and looking for kind of different kind of products. I think that was certainly a time that butchers really had to adapt and develop.
You see, I think, to be honest with you, with the amount of cooking books that are out there and cooking TV shows, etc., I would have thought people would be more inclined to seek and source good products. I wonder if butchers, either individually or collectively, need to get better at the marketing, right? Because, for instance, you know, the freshness of the meat, you know, the care that's taken with the meat, the quality of the product, the fact that it's so much fresher than often what you can buy in cling film, the fact that it's not in a plastic tray with cling film, you know, the fact that it's actually better value than you might imagine. The fact that a butcher might help you out and debone something for you or what, you know, I just wonder if you need to counter the narrative out there, because I think the population want good quality fresh produce, and I wonder are the butchers screaming from the rooftops enough on this?
I'd say certainly in the last couple of years that the butcher has realised that there is a market there for that type of thing. Like, I mean, we do compete on the world stage we go to the World Butcher Challenge every 2 years. In 2018, we actually won it in Belfast. We came fourth in Sacramento in 2021, and we were seventh in Paris last year. So, like, we certainly do, and we have adapted and moved. And there's lots of learning there for butchers, there's no doubt about it. But from a marketing point of view, that is something that we constantly lobby the government to try and help us with, you know, being able to, because the Association of Craft Butchers of Ireland is a non-for-profit organisation. We're a representative body. And basically, to be able to market that is something that we would really welcome, being able to have the resources to market. And we have lobbied government to help with that. We went over recently, Greg, to see how our colleagues over in Scotland do, because they have a very similar kind of a problem, and they got something going really well over there. And the government came on board, the Scottish Meat Board, and provided them with the resources to be able to market the butchers over there. And they have, you know, they have employed and
Jack, if you just make one observation in relation to that, right? When we go out and market our product overseas, be it, you know, beef or milk in China or America, whatever it is, it's this Irish grass-grown Irish beef, right? I hear adverts now and again, say for pork or other products. But it's not specific to butchers. It could be to your major retail. I think what I'm saying is, and I'm sorry to sound like a scratched record, the sector needs either itself or the government to say specifically that we're not talking about all manners of beef that comes on a train, you don't know where it's come from, or chicken or whatever, but that what your local butcher can provide in terms of quality and value, traceability, etc. How can you guarantee that the steak you're buying is not Brazilian, full of hormones? Well, your local butcher will tell you that. You might not get that off the back of a piece of meat in a tray. Do you know that kind of stuff?
Yes. I couldn't agree with you more, Greg. Absolutely. And I have been fighting this cause for many years. I'm on the board in the Meat and Livestock Board in Borbia, and it's something that we constantly bring to their attention. As much as they do a very, very good job in what they do certainly from an export point of view, or even from a retail point of view, which they promote their quality assurance system. We certainly, from a butcher point of view, we have a job to do to try to promote butchers and to try to promote the quality that we provide. And that is something that we really need government assistance with, to be able to market that and have the resources to be able to market that and to be able to bring that message to our customers, you know, on a national scale.
Yeah, okay, great stuff. All right, thanks. Very good value this time of year, I'd say, in the butchers for turkey legs and stuff.
Oh, absolutely. This is the busiest time of the year for all butchers, and, you know.
But with the popularity of Crowns, you've got all the other bits that are good quality meats that probably are...
Ah, we have a good range of everything for everybody. All right, Jack. We certainly do, Greg.
Keeper lit, Jack. Thanks very much indeed. Indeed, Jack Malloy, President of the Association of Craft Butchers of Ireland. The thing I had to overcome, I do favour getting meat in the butchers if I can. The thing I had to overcome personally was the meat management. So, you know, sometimes you can get, there's some great offers where you can get collections of meat for a certain amount of money. That's fine, right? But I'd become so over-reliant and cautious and nervous that I've become very reliant on best before dates or used before dates, whereas you get this beautiful fresh meat. Really, you have to vibe it, you know. You get an idea, but it's about touch and colour and smell as well. So once I overcome that, you just get far better quality meat. That being said, I did go into a butcher's and they they just had a massive box of chicken breast that had been defrosted, and I'm sure that's the same as you get elsewhere. But anyway, for the most part, good quality stuff. Right, on Christmas. And speaking of Christmas, we're paying a Christmas visit to the Archview Nursing Home. We're going to be crossing over to Sinead and the team there around about 11:30. We had a lovely visit with the beautiful residents and staff and management at Dunloe Community Hospital yesterday, and we're doing the same now at the Archview Lodge. Looking forward to it. Tommy Rosny's on board actually with Sinead today. I forgot about that. Yeah, it's Tommy and Sinead. So that should be good fun. On Christmas, I still sent Christmas cards each year, mostly hand-delivered. Who could afford postage? $1.65 per stamp. I got a Christmas card today from Santa, and there was money in it. And I don't know who sent it to me. But I'll tell you what I'm doing with that. I need the money, by the way, but I'm not going to use it for myself. I'm going to donated. I think we're doing something over at Christmas. Lee was talking about wanting to do a New Year's Day swim or something, so that'll go towards that on your behalf. I appreciate it, and I could do with spending it myself, but it feels like a more responsible thing to do with that. Thank you very much. Morning, Greg. Come to Trenta Church on Sunday, and the children are doing a nativity play, and Trenta School had one yesterday, and it was lovely. Rose sounds lovely. And we'll have choirs in with us next week, children's choirs, adults choirs, and other musicians. So you'll be able to get that through your radio as well, which is great. Happy Holidays is a load of woke rubbish, which never will replace the real meaning of Christmas. Ireland is still a Christian country. Jesus is our King. He's the reason for the season. Happy Christmas, everyone. No one's ever said to me Happy Holidays, and I'm not sure I'd be terribly comfortable with someone saying that to me. I'd probably look at them and go, what? I've tried to find a religious card in the shop for Christmas, and I can't find a religious Christmas card anywhere. All I can find is fun cards. There's something far wrong when you can't find a religious card for Christmas. That came up from someone yesterday. And someone contacted us. I'm not sure if it was someone who sells cards or someone who's speaking to someone who sells cards. And they were saying that the religious ones sell out really, really quick. And you go into a shop at this time of year and what you're seeing is what's left. So, you know, the religious nativity scenes, etc., those cards remain incredibly popular. Now, that was just one person's commentary. I'm not 100% sure if that is precisely the case, but that's what they said. Now, we're joined on the programme by Dr. Joe Kelly. Good morning, Joe. Thanks for your time.
Imagine why it's Greg is the luck day checked out.
Right, okay. I was referencing after 10 o'clock the vote on abortion. Well, when I say it was a vote on abortion, just so listeners are fully aware, it was a vote to restore a bill aimed at further liberalising abortion laws effectively. What's your view on it?
Look, Greg, as a father of five and as a man of faith, I have no choice but to have a view that says this is wrong. I'm horrified by three of our TDs in Donegal, Pierce and Padraig and Charles. They've voted for
Charles Ward, that is, by the way, just so people
Yeah, Charles Ward, yeah. And look, I think it's very cynical that this was done, you know, in the last sitting, the last eve before the dial recess for Christmas, possibly hoping that rural TDs like Pat the Cope or Charlie McConnell, who actually voted against it, might not be there present for the vote. But fortunately, it was 173 votes to 71, only two of a difference. Three of our Donegal TDs voted for it. And I just think that it's something that has to be spoken up
okay,
about.
Okay, can I phrase a question to you, right? It. Because at the moment, abortion is legal in this country and it was voted democratically by the people, right? So can that be the start point and then move forward as it relates to this vote, if that makes sense? Because I understand that you're anti-abortion, Joe, but to sort of recycle that when we know your view, we don't have the time, so more to focus on this vote and the significance of this vote for you.
Yeah, well, first of all, you can have nothing but compassion and pastoral care and things like that over the issue of abortion. And there are people that will decide to end a life, and that's their decision. And we've made it legal in this country. And maybe coming up to this time of year, Christmas, maybe this is a difficult conversation to be having. So I don't want to stir up anything like that, Greg. And I'm grateful for you to making that very clear from the beginning. This is about extending what's already there a lot further. And this is typical left, just woke policies. We get it in and bit by bit we extend it further and further and further out. And we have to have a real understanding of what our TDs are fundamentally there for. They're there primarily to legislate for us. And they told us in the last abortion referendum, which our country, as you correctly point out, the majority voted for it, that abortion would be safe, rare and legal. That was the terms they used. Rare meaning not very often. Last year, Greg, there was 11,000 abortions in our country. That was a lie that they sold the people of Ireland back during that referendum. It's not rare. And what's sadder now is that our redress TD and our Sinn Féin TDs are wanting to extend that out and increase that number from 11,000 up further. And surely to God, there's something wrong with that. And I don't believe those people that voted yes for abortion and the right to choose voted for this to be extended further and further. I don't believe that they voted for 11,000 babies to be aborted last year. And I think that that's been very fair and very balanced.
So what the people voted for, if they did do their due diligence, was abortion up to 12 weeks with that three-day wait, and in limited cases after that, so risk to life, health, fatal fetal abnormality. What in your view changed? Because after that is there anyway, and up to viability could be 22 weeks. That's in the case whereby the baby might not survive a year after birth. So just from your perspective, how do you see that broadening what's there already?
Well, by the fact that they're wanting to bring it up to the point of viability, the next stage then will be just to the point of birth. Greg, last year.
Well, can I?
Sorry, not last year.
Can I just say? And I'm kind of making your argument here. If you extend it up to the point of viability, you are already, presumably, you could make a very strong argument allowing abortion up till birth, right? Because, you know, not all babies go full term.
That's the logic that I'm trying to say. You get it in, the wedge in, this is what the left do, and then they push it along further and further and further. And they were hoping that they would get this through before Christmas with people being busy with life and family. But between 2019 and 2022, there were 86 failed abortions where the child was actually born, aborted but survived and came out alive. Again, where's this is a grey area. So what, are they left to die? We don't know what's happened to those babies. We're very, very unclear on this. And here we have three of our TDs extending this further and further and further. This is wrong. And what I find really, really ironic, and I'm sorry that I have to say this, Redress are wanting to fix our homes, homes where we raise families, homes where we have kids, we bring kids into the world. But the very first home that we have, our womb, our mother's womb, they're wanting to make it unsafe for the child. I think it has to be called out.
I don't know what the views of all people within 100% Redress are, and I don't know how much conversation goes on before a vote with the councillors. For an example, it's not like a major party, Joe, whereby, you know, Sinn Féin had a stance and every TD to a man and woman voted a certain way. So, you know, I can't speak on behalf of the elected councillors if Charles Ward voted along their points of view.
Well, I contacted a councillor in Redress. I don't want to name the individual. They hemmed and hawed, well, I'm not a TD. And then they said, well, this has nothing to do with Redress. And I said, look, this is very simple. You're a practicing Catholic. You go to Mass in a church that we both know. And I said, where do you stand on this? And he did not give me an answer. And by not giving an answer, I said to him, let's make it very clear. By not giving me an answer, you're more or less saying yes. You have not said no. So I think that they've made it very clear. Until such time as they come out themselves and explain where they stand, but we know where they stand. I don't want to be getting in one party or another.
No, this is
about children. This is about life.
We're in a conversation now whereby some might describe even as whataboutery. At the end of the day, regardless of how this vote was conducted or what have you, the 3-day waiting period remains. You know, the limits as to when one can have an abortion, if they choose to do so, remain. So really, that's democracy in action, isn't it? This was put before the Dáil in a democratic way, and that Dáil, with a free vote from government parties, in fairness, it was defeated 73 votes to 71. So is that not... you know, we're not talking about something that is going to happen. We're talking about something that is not now going to happen because of that vote.
And that happened. Yeah, look, Greg, again, I think you're very fair and very balanced in this, and it's a very difficult thing to talk about. And you're absolutely right. And we talk often about democracy and respecting democracy. But remember, there's only two votes of a difference. And so when people go out to vote next time round, they need to have in front of their mind that Sinn Féin and Redress will be voting yes again. They only need one more vote to swing this. Mm. And so what I'm saying is people in Donegal have to think that when they go to vote in the next Dáil election, that the way they vote, be whatever it over Mica or Redress or whatever it is, that there's also a hidden thing in there that they're also voting for.
It's not hidden, very, very clear. We're talking about it very frankly now, and it's out there.
But what I'm saying is a lot of people don't identify the two issues.
Yeah, well, you see, I wanted to talk about this after the vote, but I wanted to be very clear what was being voted on, and that's why I held off, because I wanted to have a proper conversation about it. And we can return to this next week. But the thing is, Joe, too, it depends when someone goes out to vote, what's motivating them to vote, you know what I mean? And it might not be this issue. They might be happy with, you know, and you are quite right. And let's be absolutely clear. Leo Varadkar, and it was Bill Clinton that originally said it in the United States, I think back in the early 90s, wasn't it? But Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, ahead of the 2018 referendum, did say that abortions would be safe, legal and rare. Just to put a bit of context to this, there's around about 54, 55,000 babies born in Ireland annually. That was from the census in 2022. 2024, slightly down from 23. So 10 or 11 abortions does represent quite a significant... But we don't know how many of those people may have chosen to go abroad either, Joe. And then we have to have the conversation about can we force women to do something that they don't want to do?
Yeah, well, the issue maybe is beyond that, Greg. As we said, we understand where the legislation is up to now, but the yesterday evening's vote was trying to bring it on a bit further, if that makes sense. And I think that's what we're really focusing on. And I don't want to be stirring up emotion at this time, and particularly at Christmas time and the birth of a child and children and all that. But at the same time, this is just an extension or a furthering on of the issue of life, trying to reduce the dignity of the baby in the womb, even up to the point of viability. And look, I know I'm going to get criticised for this. I'm going to be blackened for what I say. I'm going to be labelled. I'm going to be treated with scorn by some. But you know what, Greg? I don't care. I'm willing to stand and speak for the voiceless, the children in the womb. Mm. And it's not an easy thing to do. And there's plenty of people that will sit and listen to your radio today and say, you know, he's speaking.
Listen, I know what you're saying, but you're not a martyr, Joe. There's lots of people have this same view.
But what I'll say to you is, in terms of
numbers, right, which is find interesting. In 2014, there were 67,400 babies born. In 2024, there were 54,000 babies born, which is a difference of 13,000. And in 2024, there were 11,000 abortions. Right. So people can look at those figures themselves and they can determine whether or not those were babies that would eventually have been born, or maybe there's other factors that adjust the birth rate. I don't know. But the reality is, in the last 10 years, the birth rate has dropped by a number very equal to the amount of abortions that we saw last year. So, you know, that's people can draw up their own conclusions from that, Joe. But do you believe that it's inevitable that this vote will go before the Dáil Éireann, and that it might be tight or it might swing in the other direction? And how much of a concern is that to you?
That's why I'm speaking out, Greg, and it's not to be a martyr or anything out there. I want to identify the issue that what we have in certain TDs in our county is that they're going to extend this out. They haven't succeeded on this occasion, but they're going to succeed on the next occasion if we, the electorate, don't waken up and realise what has been done in our name when we go to vote for certain TDs.
All right.
It's as simple as that.
I wasn't having a go at you either, too.
It's difficult to say that, Greg.
I don't think being pro-life or against abortion is a minority view or something people are ashamed of. I hear people give their views in relation to this quite openly all of the time, if you know what I mean. So I don't think we're there at the point whereby you're sticking your head above the parapet. Do you know that sort of a way? I think it's still a very active conversation, and people really, especially in this day and age, you know, people are very happy to speak about it publicly, it might seem.
You're speaking to an electorate that's listening in Highland Radio that voted pro-life, Greg, but you go outside Donegal and that's not what you'll receive, I believe. And that's not been my experience.
I sound like I'm cutting across you. That's my intention. It'd be very interesting to see a more recent poll in the context of this vote in the Dáil to see, you know, how the nation... Because, you know, a lot of people voted a certain way because there were very emotive arguments being made. And you today are making emotive arguments, and I understand why you're doing that. But this got over the line through other types of arguments that were very emotional as well. And I just wonder, with this new information, if people that thought they were voting a certain way for certain reasons, if they've changed that position one way or other.
Well, I would think that some people that I would talk to that would have been voting yes to abortion certainly would not have been voting yes to what's been put before the Dáil the last night. Absolutely not. I don't think anybody would have envisaged that that's where this was heading. And again, this is back to the wedge of the left, where they get a little bit and they push on more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And Greg, we're going to have the same issue with the euthanasia. Mm-hmm. They'll say it's only for a few and it's only for this reason and that reason. And as time goes on, it's pushed further.
I understand
further
that, and I've expressed that concern. The one thing I will say, and I understand, I don't think we have an established left and right in this country. And I think people who might be conservative in some ways, may have voted liberally in inverted commas in this way. I just don't think we're there yet, but I respect everything you say, of course, when I agree or disagree. Dr. Joe Kelly, thank you very much for your time.